This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to a special Monday edition of the Orange Bloods podcast. It is part two of my Mac Brown Chronicles, where I'm going to kind of outline some of the more interesting stories and funny moments and notable occurrences during the era that is a couple of coaches removed now. But as the Longhorns put themselves into a position over the weekend to play in the first Big 12 championship game that the team has been in since 2009, which was kind of like, does anybody watch Nebraska, Texas, 2009? Does anybody have the DVD of that? Is anybody watching that? If you think about Big 12 championship games that Texas has played in, there have only been a couple. That's amazing when you think about it. Like, I mean, I guess you go back to 96, you can go back to 99, then you have 2005, then you have 2009. And it's crazy to me to think that Texas hasn't played in that many Big 12 championship games over the course of its history. Clearly, Texas hasn't gone in the last decade, and they haven't gone since the Big 12 has gone down to 10 teams, and there's the round-robin schedule that takes place now. So, you know, probably not a horrible time to do a Mac Brown Chronicles. Real quick, want to give a shout-out to the guys over at Texas Card House, 183 in Anderson Mill. Their massive $250,000 guaranteed tournament at the end of this month. Go to the website, texascardhouse.com, for details. Of course, walk in. You've got tournament games. You've got cash games. They open at noon, 7 days a week. I'm guessing there will be Thanksgiving Day poker for those of you that need to get out of the house, you know, and away from the family. So, lots of stuff going on. By the way, that $250,000 tournament at the end of the month has a $100,000 guarantee for the winner. That's what's up. Thank you to Texas Card House, Austin, and the state of Texas's number one premier poker club. So where do we begin with the Mac Brown part two of these chronicles that I'm doing? Like, on some level, you know, the first half of the Mac Brown Chronicles dealt with the early relationship. It dealt with how I got credentials for orangebloods.com, at least in terms of the very, very early days. If you haven't heard that podcast, subscribe to the Yak. It is a premium one. I'm going to make this one a free podcast so that you guys can listen to it this week. But part one was a premium podcast over on the Yak, and it was a doozy. It really was, including the time that Mac Brown made me the offer to be kind of his inside man if I would only be his James Hell, and I declined, and that offer was never made again. And you know, that's probably a good place to pick up this podcast and the Mac Brown Chronicles and some of the directions that it went in. I feel like I had a two-part relationship with Mac Brown. I feel like part A was pre-radio, and I feel like part B was post-radio, which brings me to one of my favorite stories to tell, which I want to say it occurred back in 2006. I was doing fill-in work for, I want to say, Bucky Godbolt was on vacation. I used to be the main fill-in guy for Bucky and Aaron over at 1300 The Zone. When Bucky was out, Aaron would have me in. And occasionally, when Aaron was out, Bucky would have me in. So I kind of, and I was like their UT recruiting expert and all of that kind of stuff. I was their go-to guy, which eventually led to the relationship that Aaron and I had that went over to the Horn. I'll never forget, though, I was filling in. It had to have been during the football season. For whatever reason, I think Bucky was gone for a day. I filled in for Aaron. And, you know, this was the old 6 to 10 show. So on Mondays, if I would fill in, I would go to the radio station down off of South Congress. And then from there, I would just go ahead and go to the university because it made zero sense to do anything else between 10 and 11 o'clock. You just finish the radio show, go on over to the school, and get ready for the Monday press conference. So on this particular Monday, I showed up, was walking to the Monday press conference. And every once in a while, it's weird because Mac and I had such a weird relationship because there were times when I thought we were pretty cool. There were other times when I knew we weren't, and I'll get to some of those stories in a little bit. But on this particular day, I was walking from the parking garage. I go over by the football field house, and Bill Little, and it might have even been John Bianco. Like every Monday, they would go get Mac and walk with him. And I can't remember if Bianco was there, but I'm pretty sure Bill Little was there. And it just so happened that I was walking to the stadium, and I just like crossed paths with Mac and with Bill Little. And Mac let me know that he had heard me on the radio that day. And I thought that was kind of funny because it was sports talk morning radio the Monday after a game. I didn't ask Mac, why were you listening to the radio? That's usually I would tell any coach that I know, hey man, Mondays, like even after this weekend, I don't know how healthy it would be for Tom Herman to be listening to sports talk radio in this town, even after a win. It's sports talk radio. But on this particular day, Mac had heard some of the radio and he was letting me know. And I have always believed that part of the advice that Mac gave me was soaking in his own self-interest. But I also thought Mac was genuinely just trying to be a nice guy. He'd been listening to the radio. He let me know, I heard you on the radio, and let me give you some advice. And it might have been the first piece of radio advice that I ever received because I hadn't been on the radio enough that Orange Bloods members, and believe me, the radio advice eventually came, but Mac Brown gave me one of my first pieces of radio advice after I did this show back in 2006. And his message was, all that stuff that you did, I wouldn't do that. He told me to tone it down, that less personality, less me, essentially. And that was kind of it. Like, hey, I heard you on the radio, and a little bit of radio advice. You should stop doing what you're doing. But it is symbolic, I think, of what happened after I ended up on the radio, which was a full-time thing early in 2008. You know, if we go back to when all of that was happening, quick little story on the radio stuff. So Sean Adams and I did a podcast after games back in 2006 at Champion Sports Bar, and they were really successful. That place after a game would pack to the rafters. We would do the podcast, and other than the official post-game radio show, it was the first of its kind, a live post-game breakdown of what was taking place on the field. And this was right after the national championship season, so the interest was at an all-time high. And then we go into 2007, and I had my first full-time radio offer gig, and I turned it down because I wanted to do a show with Jeff Ward and Ed Clements. Specifically, Jeff Ward and I did this show called The Football Show on Monday nights, and it was sold. You know, I got paid for it. Like and it was a chance to work for the number one station in town. 2008 was a big year for the site because in February of 2008, I guess technically in February 2008, I started my own show with what at the time wasn't 104.9 FM. We were on the AM side, 1560 or 1530. I can't even remember what the hell the station call numbers were anymore. It's been that long ago. But very quickly after that, in March, Chad Hastings and I started our afternoon drive time show, which lasted for 4 years, the number one rated show in town all 4 years in the sports radio market. Proud to say that. And that was also the year that Chip Brown joined the website. As all of that stuff was happening at the same time, me getting on the radio, it just changed the relationship with Mac. I always thought, you know, because Mac would, all of these stories that I would tell in the first episode about where Mac would make me feel guilty and make me feel bad for doing whatever it is that I would have done, no matter what the reasons were. Mac had this way of making me feel bad, but that kind of stopped our relationship for the final half decade he was in town, maybe a little bit more than that. It truly changed when I got on the radio. And at that point, Mac Brown never really talked with me the way we would sometimes talk in these off the record moments ever again. And I always thought Mac's afraid that I'm going to say something about him on the radio. Mac is afraid that if he says anything to me that's, you know, the kind of thing you wouldn't necessarily want admitted on the radio. So Mac just stopped having a relationship with me. And then we never really had a relationship, but we would have these moments where once a year, once every 2 years, I would do something that would piss him off so badly that he would reach out and I would catch the riot act and I would get the lecture and I would be made to feel like I had let him down. But that all stopped. That all stopped once I started doing the radio show. And it started a new era where Mac got really scared of Orange Bloods. There got to be a point where the site became the number one site in the Rivals.com food chain. There got to be a point where we weren't just online, but suddenly we were doing radio. Suddenly we were doing television. Suddenly you couldn't turn anywhere without hearing and people talking about Orange Bloods. And all of this, you know, occurred from like 2005 to 2008, starting with on the field, the Longhorns having their national championship run, back-to-back Rose Bowls, all of that. But also the Ryan Perilou recruitment. And, you know, this transition that the site made changed the way Mac Brown looked at us. We used to be this pesky little internet service that he kind of had to placate. But, you know, I don't think we registered as a big deal. And then eventually we ended up becoming a big deal. And his response to all of that for, oh gosh, the better part of his last 5 years in town was to just make us the boogeyman. He was legitimately scared of orangebloods.com to the point where I thought it was unhealthy for Mac. You know, this isn't hyperbole. This isn't me making this up. Mac Brown, once upon a time, used to, and if you're wondering where this information was verified, this information comes verified from his own coaching staff. Because Mac would do this thing where he would go into his coaches' meetings, and one of the very first things that he would say is, "What's being said on orangebloods.com today?" He would start off his staff meetings asking about what's happening on Orange Bloods. And at one point, he gave this edict out, I think it was in 2010, that if he found out that any of his coaches were talking to orangebloods.com, then he would fire them. Like, that's, every day was about talking about Orange Bloods, and every day was about warning his staff not to talk about Orange Bloods. One of my favorite stories is there is an assistant coach that was on his staff, and I won't get into the specifics because I don't want to completely dime out the coach and exactly what was happening. It involved a recruit that Texas, and where the fan base, this kid eventually played at Texas, by the way. But at the time, Texas wasn't going to recruit this kid. So the meeting, there was a legitimate meeting that took place where Mac threatened his staff that if they called anybody for Orange Bloods, that he would do away with them. But when that particular staff meeting was over, he grabbed one of his assistant coaches and said, "Hey, can you contact Jason Sukumel and let him know that we're not recruiting this kid?" And it was like, it was just weird. It was just weird. I had a relationship with one of his coaches that was hired following the disaster of 2010. So 2010 season happens, the staff shakeup that occurred. And as Mac was bringing in new assistant coaches from there until that final season in 2013, I had a buddy of mine that he hired. This guy was such a buddy of mine that a few years prior to that, when he was working at another Big 12 school, I used to just shoot the bull with him on the phone at all times. Like, we would go out on the road and have dinner occasionally. If he needed something, I would answer questions for him. And I can remember he had a guy that he signed 1 year that ended up being an NFL player. And I had him rated, I don't know, like top 20 in the state. And I'll never forget being on a boat on Devil's Cove on a weekend with just zaniness occurring around me. And I'm at the front of the boat having a philosophical recruiting conversation about one of the kids that he had signed. So I was boys with this guy. And when he got hired, I thought I was in. It's like, oh my God, I've waited my entire life for Mack Brown to hire somebody that I'm boys with. Boys. And this guy joins the staff. Let me tell you how much of a friend he was. I put together like a 15-page Word document for his family. All the different types of restaurants in town. He lived in the Cedar Park area. So I put together all of the different Mexican food restaurants, Italian restaurants, barbecue, breakfast, places to take the kids, local parks, you name it. I put together this because he's my friend. This is what I do for friends. You're coming to Austin? This is my town? Holy crap. Let me make your visit. Let me make your life better in any way that I can. I put together this monster document. Basically like what you need to do once you move into Austin. Babysitters, you name it, man, you name it. And about, I don't know, a couple of weeks later, my friend calls me up on the phone and he's like, what the fuck did you do to Mack Brown? I'm like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, man, he hates you. And I'm like, man, I have never done anything to Mack. He's like, well, look, all I know is that you get talked about a lot and you're a problem for me. I can't really talk to you. At least I got to take a break because Mack Brown dislikes you so much and he talks about you so much that I'm afraid that I will lose my job if I see myself, you know. If anybody knows that we know each other, that's a problem for me. And truth be told, I think that might have been the last phone conversation that he and I ever had. So we went from him calling me to tell me that he got the job and me putting together notes for his family upon moving here that within a couple of weeks, Mack Brown had given him such an icky vibe about me that our friendship ended. I don't even remember the last time we talked. Now, ironically, he ended up becoming a source for Jason. I can say this, right? Like, he's not on staff anymore. It was so weird. Mack would be so, players, coaches, you name it. They would tell me like, man, what did you do? Because Mack, eventually it got to the point where Mack would hold meetings and tell his players that if they found out that any player was talking to the media, that they would take their scholarships away from them. Like it just, in the end, and I think this was a problem for Mack. Because in the end, Mack was worried, was paranoid about the internet. He was way more paranoid about the internet than I think he was dialed in as a head coach to making his product as good as it could possibly be. And you know, it just wasn't a healthy deal. One of my favorite stories to tell, and this will give you an idea of like how consumed Mack Brown was by the internet. And, you know, we'll get into in a second after I tell this story, we'll go into the situation with the UTS ID handle at the time of all of the big coaching searches. But here's a perfect example. And I've told this story before. I was doing a film evaluation of Steve Edman back on the website at one point or another. You know, Steve, I got to remember when Steve Edman was even a prospect. What was that, like 2009? So I'm doing a film project on Steve Edmund. And I ended up posting my thoughts on the website. And, you know, because headlines matter, everybody, clickbait, clickbait. Well, yeah, no, because we want our things to be read. So the more interesting the headline of your post can be, the more likely that people are going to consume that deal. So I know it's a very 2018 to say clickbait and fake news, but with regards to clickbait, like literally everything on the internet is clickbait. That is literally how the internet works. If you're on Twitter or if you're on Facebook or you're someone sends you an email, click on this link. It's clickbait. That is what the internet is. So I put together this headline that this is me paraphrasing. I think the headline was Steve Edmund carries a wallet that reads bad MF. It was me paying homage to the movie Pulp Fiction. For those of you that have never seen the movie Pulp Fiction, Jules, played by Samuel L. Jackson, is at a diner. There's a bit of a standoff with guns. Jules's wallet is in a bag full of wallets. And when the guy who's robbing the diner asks Jules, because he's going to get Jules's wallet out, because Jules has a gun pointed at him. When he asks Jules, how will I know which one is your wallet? Jules says, it's the one with bad motherfucker written on it. And he reaches in, and sure enough, he sees the wallet with bad motherfucker written on it. So I'm like, Steve Edmund carries a wallet with bad MF written on it as the headline. This is not a fib. This is not me making this story up. This following story legitimately happened. Mac contacted one of his assistant coaches and was and called him in like in a frantic, you know, kind of attitude. And the guy picks up the phone. He's like, hey, coach, what's going on? We gotta get a hold of Dangerfield High School right now. We gotta call the head coach. We gotta get a hold of Steve Edmund. Coach is like, what's going on? What's wrong? I just saw over on Orange Bloods, apparently Steve Edmund has a wallet with bad motherfucker written on it. And we can't have Steve Edmund walking around with a wallet like that, man. I mean, reporters get a hold of that and it becomes a story. And we just gotta let him know, like, that can't happen. And the coach had to walk Mac down off the ledge. Hey, Mac. It's just an expression. It's Pulp Fiction. It's not real. Steve Edmund doesn't really have a wallet with bad MF written on the wallet. Rest easy. But that was kind of the level of the paranoia that existed. It was constantly looking at orangebloods.com to see what was being talked about. It was holding staff meetings, talking about not letting your assistant coaches talk to the members of the media. If you talk to anybody at Orange Bloods, I'll fire you. It was holding team meetings. And this wasn't like a once a day or once a week. This was regular. Towards the end, I just felt like the internet was unhealthy for Mac. That, you know, everybody has to deal with the internet in 2010 and 2011 and 2012. It's part of the deal. Look at where we are now. And these kids that coaches are recruiting today have never lived in a world where they didn't have cell phones and the internet and social media. So, you know, Mac was there at the beginning of the social media rise and he just wasn't ready for it. You think about the Buck Burnett thing that he had to deal with, where Buck tells a racist Obama joke on Facebook. And, you know, Buck had to learn the hard way, man. Social media is for real. That there are consequences. And Mac was always nervous of that stuff. I mean, you know, Mac Brown used to like to tell the story that he would never take a picture with anybody other than if he was in a picture with a woman that wasn't his wife, he made a point to always be able to show his hands because he didn't ever want a photo to come out where you couldn't see one of his hands and it could be said of him that he was doing something with his hands in this photo of a woman that he wasn't doing. So there were a lot of things that Mac Brown was really smart about, and I'm sure the paranoia that he lived with on a daily basis, I'm sure there were times when it benefited him. But everybody likes to bring up the Air Coryell thing. For those that are completely unfamiliar with that story, if you go back to, well, it had to have been during the 2011 offseason when, I'm trying to remember, because there were numerous coordinator changes in the final years of the Mack Brown era. But in this final, after the entire staff got wiped out and Mack essentially rebuilt his staff in 2011, what is really notable about that whole thing was that there was a poster named Air Coryell. And this particular poster arrived out of nowhere as a bit of a secret poster. It's inside information. And he never really put a lot of nuggets and details into his posts, but occasionally he would pop up on something on Orange Bloods that we were reporting, and he would say, no, that's inaccurate. You guys don't know what you're talking about. I know what I'm talking about. So, you know, it was somebody that we were keeping an eye on. It was somebody that we felt like knew somebody or something, but we were reporting things that absolutely happened. And this guy was posting that the things that we were reporting on didn't happen. So we started to feel suspicious about the motives of this poster, because every single thing that was reported, they would push back and say that didn't happen. Even if we spoke to, you know, I think sometimes you guys just don't realize how dialed in we are. More times than not, we're talking to the participants involved in all of these stories. If not them, their agents, or there's always a connection. We always know somebody that knows somebody. Always. So, you know, there are times that we're wrong. Like, even think about the situation with Terrell Austin, which, if I'm not mistaken, was during this offseason. It's Austin became a thing because I was steadfast in my belief that Terrell Austin was going to be the new defense coordinator at Texas. Now, why would I think such a thing? Well, because Terrell Austin took the job, and because Terrell Austin was introduced to either three team leaders. I think Keenan Robinson was one of the guys. Might not have been Keenan. I don't want to dime out who it was that we had access to, but there were, you know, a number of guys that were in this meeting. It wasn't even a meeting. It was an introduction. Guys, meet Terrell Austin, your new defensive coordinator. So that introduction happened. We found out about the introduction. Our information was too good, because the next day, Terrell Austin, after spending a day with Mack Brown, had second thoughts and was like, no, man, actually, this isn't for me. So the day after he's introduced to the players as the new defensive coordinator, Terrell Austin changed his mind. But in that moment where he was changing his mind, because I knew he'd already taken a job and been introduced to the players, I was like, no, it's Austin. It did turn out to be Austin. But at that same time, and ironically, Terrell Austin is the one thing that I ended up getting wrong, and we kind of misreported, although how do you misreport something if you're right? I mean, for a day, Terrell Austin was the Texas defensive coordinator. For a day. Maybe less than a day. Anyway, during that offseason, Air Coryell, about everything else we had been reporting, was like just trying to basically serve as Scud missiles. Just being launched, going in any direction, land where they may, cause disruption and chaos. So I don't even remember what it was specifically that this guy, somebody was, I don't know, we reported something. And Air Coryell was supposed to make a post under his own handle. Once again, kind of shitting all over whatever it is that we reported, except Air Coryell made a mistake. Air Coryell made the mistake of not checking to see which Orange Bloods handle he was logged in under. As it turns out, he wasn't on a laptop. He wasn't at home. he was in an office at the University of Texas. Which office? Well, it probably comes down to the handle. Because instead of posting under Air Coryell, Air Coryell posted under the handle UTSID. Now you're probably wondering, well, look, UTSID, that could mean anything. Like, yes, it says UTSID, but maybe it's not really UTSID. It was really UTSID because I set up the account for, wait for it, the Texas Sports Information Office, SID. So I immediately was furious because I thought that this was a John Bianco SID thing, that instead of media relations, they were taking part in an active conspiracy to make our undermine our reporting to protect the program, which isn't the job of the SID. So as everybody on in real time watched this, I made this bold declaration that I would find out the bottom of what the hell's happening, and then I would get back with everybody and expose what the hell's going on. So we called up John Bianco. I think I actually sent Bianco like this heated text message, not text message, email, I think. Whatever it was, phone call, text message, email, whatever, I sent it to John, and John was like, it was not us. And I'm like, bullshit, it said UTSID. Then that's when he came clean. A certain somebody who may or may not have run onto the field in the 2007 Holiday Bowl, Smith's Tessie, otherwise known as Chris Jesse. The claim that I got was that he was actually Air Coryell and that he was sitting at a sports information office computer, not realizing that he wasn't logged in under his own pseudonym handle, posted under UTSID, freaked out, couldn't change it. It was too late. And here I am calling to raise hell. Like, what are you guys doing? And then they tell me it's Chris Jesse. And then I had to make a decision. Because here's where I was. And again, a lot of times you guys don't know how the sausage is made. It just shows up in an Owen sausage container and you cook it up and it tastes good. You don't want to see how it's made. At that point, I find out that it's Chris Jesse. And I realize, like, if I make a big deal out of this, this is going to end up on Deadspin. This is going to end up on Sports by Brooks. This is going to end up on all of the sites. And here Mack Brown is in a coaching search. And his stepson is on the internet doing, you know, things he shouldn't be doing under the pretense that he shouldn't be doing it. Because at the time, Chris Jesse was working in the football department. If I'm not mistaken, he was the actual driver in a lot of instances when they were picking these guys up at the airport and the coaches and stuff like that. And nobody from Texas ever told me not to report it. Nobody ever said, hey, please don't do this. But the situation that I found myself in was, if we made a big deal out of that situation, I thought it would have been, considering where Mac was, I thought it would have been incredibly embarrassing. I thought it would have hurt the working relationship moving forward. Mac, it was already bad. Mac's already holding meetings and telling his coaches not to talk to us. And now I've caught his stepson red-handed in this nefarious affair. And I've made the decision to let it go. Jason Sukumel and me and probably Chip Brown, like, we talked about it. And there's nothing in it for us. There's just no, the only byproduct of that is embarrass Mac and make life more difficult for us in trying to do our job because we hung Mac out to dry. So the Air Coryell thing was a discussion that at the time everybody wanted us to blow the lid off. And I took the hit on that. A lot of people got pissed at me because I said I would tell everybody what happened. But then once I found out what happened, I felt like it was in the best interest of Certainly Mac, but it wasn't about Mac. It was about us. It was about us and, you know, not wanting to be the story. I know you guys in this age of fake news don't take the journalistic code of ethics that I feel like those of us at orangebloods.com absolutely prescribe to. Our job isn't to be the news. It's to report the news. And in this instant, the story was internet stuff. And, you know, and whether or not Mac Brown had anything, I will never know. I've never had a conversation with Chris Jesse about any of this. Once it passed, I've never had a conversation with John Bianco about any of this. Once it was, Jeff, it's in your hands. Do with it what you may. This is what happened, though. I just let it go. And I let it go because I thought it was the right thing to do. Not because I was protecting Mac, although I did. There's no doubt that that story could have gotten a lot more play. Like, if we push the envelope on that, it ends up on all of the websites. It doesn't end up on ESPN.com, maybe. I don't think so. It doesn't, but it ends up in the hands of people that you know. For Mac, I did him a solid. He never thanked me for it. He only trashed me later on forevermore anytime he ever came across anybody about me, but I absolutely did Mac a solid. But I would be disingenuous if I didn't admit that it had a lot of self-interest involved there, not in terms of access, just in terms of I don't feel like the overwhelming majority of the subscribers at orangebloods.com would be embarrassing with us airing out the football program like that in a way that no rules were broken. It just looked bad. And at the end of the day, the only people, it just didn't make sense to press the matter. But that's what happened. That's the full story. That is all context. That's it. I've told the story before, little bits and pieces, but this is airing out exactly what happened in that story. And it is a microcosm of what it was like really for the last 6, 7, 8 years as Mac Brown was the head coach. He went from a guy that used to contact me on the phone to tell me he was pissed about something to not ever doing that again and always wanting to use a third party. And it was so weird because I never hung Mac out to dry. You guys have never heard this story like this. It's almost a decade later. 8 years later, 7 years later, I tell the Eric Coryell story in complete transparent fashion. Mac Brown always worried about me for, I don't know, exposing him? Like, it's weird because in all of the years that I ever knew Mac and I had some stories. And I never put him on blast. I'll give you another example of a story that I never put Mac Brown on blast about. He probably deserved it, though. On National Signing Day back in 2005, a lot of people, I've told this story before too, but I don't think I've told it on a podcast. Everybody knew that Ryan Perilou was going to sign with LSU, even as of the night before, he was still saying he was going to sign with Texas. Well, Colt McCoy and his dad, Brad, look, Brad McCoy used to get called helicopter dad and all of that stuff when Colt was in school. My only personal experiences with Brad McCoy were always positive. Like, I know he kind of earned that label. Of course, his son started quarterback for 4 years. So maybe if your kid's a quarterback for 4 years, that kind of stuff happens if you're a high school coach. But Brad McCoy and I were always cool. Just like the Shipley family. Like, anytime I would see those guys, they always were nice. Especially the Shipleys. Like, I love the Shipley family. I don't know that I would say I love the McCoy family, but we always, you know, because we didn't have that kind of relationship. But if I saw Brad McCoy, he would say hello. And back in the day, Brad McCoy would call me up. And on National Signing Day in 2005, Brad McCoy called me up. I pick up the phone. Hey, coach, how's it going? Hey, Jeff, can you tell me whether or not Ryan Perilou signed his letter of intent with LSU? I didn't ask any questions. I knew that Colt McCoy had taken in-home visits with the LSU coaches, that I always wonder what might have happened if Ryan Perilloux had signed with Texas, but that's not what happened. Ryan Perilloux signed with LSU. And on National Signing Day, Brad McCoy calls me up, asks me what happened with Ryan Perilloux. And I'm like, Ryan Perilloux, like 15 minutes ago, signed his letter of intent. He's going to LSU. There wasn't much else in the conversation. Brad McCoy was like, cool, thank you for the information. I was like, no problem, coach. Have a good day. And that was kind of it. So about 6 hours later, Mack Brown is doing his post-signing day remarks. And in the old days, they don't do it like this anymore. They used to do a TV function, and then there was an off-to-the-side function. So he would do his press conference in front of the television and the radio people, and it would be broadcasted. And that's the stuff that you guys would see. But then he would have this sidebar session. And over the years, the way it was conducted changed. You know, there were times when they would sit him like at a desk and everybody would sit around him. On this particular occasion, we went over to the Centennial Room, and there were just a bunch of big round tables that they put together. So they squeezed a bunch of round tables together to make what was like one big long table of round tables. And Mac sat at the head of the table. And then we all just kind of grabbed a spot alongside the tables. And in the middle of that sidebar, and I don't know if anybody would remember it, but Kirk Bowles was there. I mean, everybody, Chip Brown was there. Everybody that covered Texas on the radio or on the print and internet side, they were there that day. And so anybody ever wants to question this story, feel free. You know, not all these stories can be verified other than by a couple of people, but this one happened in front of a bunch of people. Mac called me out in the press conference in front of everybody in the media. He was like, well, you know, we've had some problems with media members calling up our recruits and trying to scare them away. And he's kind of laying it all out there. And then out of nowhere, he goes, and Jeff Ketchum, he called Brad McCoy today to try to scare off Colt. And I was just, what? Say who? What? And I was like, excuse me, Mac? And Mac was like, yes, Brad McCoy called me earlier today to let me know that you called him and tried to scare him and his commitment to Texas. The only time I've ever in person snapped at Mack Brown. And because usually, like, he's the main guy. Like, I'm just a little guy. I'm not the main guy. So even in a Q&A with Mack, I always respected, this is the Mack Brown show, and I'm just here for it. But on this day, he called me out in front of all of my peers. And I was like, actually, Mac, you need to check yourself. I was like, that didn't happen. You want to know what happened? What happened is Brad McCoy called me. And you know what Brad McCoy called me about? Brad McCoy called me to ask if Ryan Perilloux had signed with LSU yet. Now, I didn't ask him why. I didn't ask, what's going on, coach? What's up with your son? All I said was that he signed with LSU, because that's all he asked me. And if you want to bring up things that you thought were said between parents and media members and coaches and players and things like that, then we can have a real discussion. Because I got all kinds of stuff to say about things that have actually happened. And it was tense. And everybody was like waiting to see what Mac did in that moment. And Mac backed down. Mac was like, I guess I must have heard wrong. And I was like, heard wrong. I let it go, but what I wanted to say was, kiss my ass, Mac. Heard wrong. Heard wrong. Right. Brad McCoy called you out of the blue and told you that I did that? And now that I push back, you're going to claim that you heard wrong? If Mac had really believed that that had happened, clap back at me, Mac. Clap back. Tell me that, no, that's not what you were told. But, you know, Mac is rich, Mac is powerful, Mac is in charge of most things. And on that day, Mac thought he could just make some shit up and put me on the spot and that I would shrink like a violet. And that didn't happen. And wasn't too long after that, I was doing radio. And it wasn't too long after that, that the relationship as a whole just wasn't very good. And I guess the final thing, the end, right? You know, The end was crazy. Mac's final few days and weeks, Mac wanted so badly. Mac was paranoid. Paranoid about everybody. I mean, we reached deep state level of paranoia, tinfoil hat level of paranoia. I once had somebody who worked with me that felt like Mac was telling people that he had a drug habit and was using drugs for access to the program, that we were all doing it. And I was like, dude, that's crazy. That didn't happen. I don't know if it happened, but to keep this particular reporter's sanity clear, I was like, that didn't happen, man. You got to let that go. That's crazy talk. Say it out loud. Say it out loud. But it does give you a bit, because at the end, everybody remembers Belmont Trader as the poster, who had incredible insight into what was going on in the program. Truth of the matter is, Belmont Trader was an affluent Texas donator, a guy who I think most people would recognize the name, and he wanted to provide details on what was happening in the program, but he knew people knew his handle. He felt like if he told me that people would know that it came from him. So who was Belmont Trader? Belmont Trader was a handle created by me for this particular very dialed in Texas booster / supporter / big dog. And his level of, because his feeling was, look, man, if Mac survives this and they think that I am talking to you and they believe that everybody's talking to everybody. That's always the funny thing. People are like, man, they think everybody is talking to you. It's like, you're talking to me. So yeah, there's a lot of people that talk to us. I created this handle so that it wouldn't trace back to him at all. And then whenever he wanted to, he logged in, posted what he wanted to post, but the account was actually set up by me. Now, I've told that story before as a way of saying, I know who Belmont Trader is. He's an actual person. It wasn't somebody making stuff up. And at the end, you know, maybe at the end, Mac Brown was right to be paranoid because you had people like Belmont Trader. Shout out to Belmont Trader, by the way, should he be listening to the podcast. I don't know if he's a Yak subscriber or not, but this one will be free. So who knows? Maybe he'll check it out. Anyway, I'm looking at the clock. We've reached that moment. I feel like I've told most of I'm sure there's a bunch of Mac stories that I haven't told, but, and let me finish this. Let me finish part two of the Mac Brown Chronicles. Let my final word on this be this. I think Mac Brown's a Hall of Fame coach. Now, Mac Brown didn't always see eye to eye. He and I didn't always get along. My job and his job weren't always parallel in terms of what each needed to do. And even though Mac and I had our, when you think about almost a, you know, 16-year relationship, I always felt like Mac Brown and I had a decent relationship, even though he hated me. Even though I don't know that Mac Brown would piss on me if I was on fire. Actually, I think Mac's decent enough dude that he would probably urinate on me if I was actually on fire. I think it might take that, although who knows? if someone strapped me to the ground, he might just urinate me for the sake of urinate me, fire or no fire. But all things being equal, look like I think that this is what it looks like. This is what relationships with media members looks like. They're complicated. Sometimes, you know, what the head coach wants from the media isn't what the media feels like it's their job to do. And it can make conflict and it can make confrontation and it can make for paranoia. But at the end of the day, man, I still respect Mac. I respect Mac for the job he did. I respect Mac for the fact that Mac Brown got us our credentials. I told that story in part one of the Mac Brown Chronicles. You know, at the end of the day, was Mack Brown more good or more bad towards orangebloods.com? I would argue that he was more good. And I would argue that if he were to listen to this podcast and hear me say, orangebloods.com wouldn't be where it is if Mack Brown hadn't helped orangebloods.com get where he is, Mack would probably roll over and faint and die. Or at least faint. Mack's in such good shape, he's going to live forever. But he might just faint. He might just faint at the idea of hearing me say, yeah, Mack hated us at the end, but we wouldn't be Orange Bloods if Mack Brown hadn't stepped in and helped Orange Bloods and helped me personally. So I tell these stories in fun. I tell these stories as a way of providing insight into the history of this program as it relates to its relationship with the media. But, you know, it's not a bad thing. It is what it is. You know, there was levels of paranoia that existed. I think it's healthy to talk about these things. And I also think it's incredibly fair because Mack Brown is now a member of the media. Isn't that the biggest piece of irony at all? That he would spend years way too focused on the media covering his program. And then he became a media member, and he's a good one. You could actually make the case he's a better media member and announcer than he is a coach, and he's a Hall of Fame coach. Mack's really good. I think that makes all of this hysterically ironical. All this time worried about the media only to become a member of the media one day. I wonder if Mack has ever had a coach pull him aside and air him out over the things he thought he did, but didn't actually have correct. Anyway, that's it for today's special edition of the Orange Bloods podcast. It's already gone longer than I wanted to, but we had a good time making it. If I don't talk to you guys again before Thanksgiving, we'll have the Ticket City Locker Room, the podcast, and I'll do another podcast as well. But, you know, with the holidays in the air, call your loved ones. If there's a friend out there that you haven't talked to in a long time, and you wonder about their well-being, don't wonder about it. Call them up. I saw the tweet earlier today that Michael Gallup of the Cowboys learned during the game yesterday against the Falcons that his brother committed suicide. During the game, he learned that, and it just broke my heart. So, rest in peace, young Gallup. My heart goes out to his family. But really, it makes me think about the people that I know that that deal with anxiety, that deal with depression, that deal with really hard stuff, let's call them up. Let's, no matter what we do for the rest of this week, let nothing supersede us reaching out to someone that we know and love that might just need a phone call, might just need to hear, I was thinking about you, might just need to hear, I love you, might just need someone to come over and give them a hug. And they say, well, what's that about, man? I just wanted to hug you. I love you, man. Let's make that let's make that a priority for the week. Everybody listening, contact somebody they haven't talked to in a long time. Connect with them. Tell them, I love you, man. I love you. And we don't say that enough. And let's be there for our family and friends who need us to be there. Let's not be selfish. Let's not be so focused on ourselves that we might miss the signs of someone that we know and really care about reaching out desperately hoping for a hug. So on that note, everybody be good to each other, and we'll talk next time. Later.